Welcome to Japanese American History Dramatized, Realized, or Supersized in Cedar AB. I am the section host, Eric Chang, and our moderator today is John Asaki. Just a reminder to turn off all cell phones, at least put them on silent. There's to be no video or audio recording by any of you. They're doing a professional recording, and they will all be on the JANM website following the weekend. And I'll give it over to John Asaki.
Thank you, Eric. Welcome to all of you. When you came in, Eric handed you a sheet that lists the films we're going to try to cover today. And we're going to look at clips of these films and talk a little bit about how Japanese American history is portrayed in dramatic narrative films. So I know we've all seen a lot of documentaries about the experience, seen interviews and so forth, but I have an interest in dramatic film because of its power to really engage us emotionally in a way that sometimes documentaries and other material doesn't. So I've gone through and selected these films. This is by no means a comprehensive list. It's some of the films that have influenced me in my lifetime. I am an employee staff of the Japanese American National Museum in Los Angeles, and my job there is creating video for our exhibitions and for various educational outreach. And in fact, if I weren't giving this session, I'd be running around with a video camera documenting the conference itself. So I've gotten a little break here by being able to just show you some films and have a discussion about them and how they impact when you see them, what they do for your understanding of what it means to be a Japanese American or what that history is like. And this session was actually inspired by last summer at the museum. We screened the series 99 Years of Love. It's a 10-hour series of dramas made about Japanese Americans, but it was made by a Japanese production company, very high production value. Anyway, it was interesting because it was made from the Japanese perspective about Japanese in America. And we had some great discussions with the volunteers at the museum, about certain aspects they thought were realistically portrayed and other aspects of the experience that people thought were, you know, exaggerated or completely misunderstood by current day Japanese. So anyway, that's kind of the inspiration for this session. And we're going to start right off with a film made in 1951. Now, I was born in 1950, so this film is about as old as I am. But, you know, it continues to have, I think I saw it early on in my life, and it had a great impact on me. And the title's Gopher Broke. So we'll screen a few minutes of this introduction to the film. And we'll talk about it a little bit after we see it. So here is Gopher Broke. You have the information on your sheet about the director, writer, and I'll try to give you some more information after we see it. So
Kanakas, the ones from Hawaii. You know what they call us mainlanders? Patongs. The way they tell it, if you rap on our heads, it's like hitting a coconut. Hollow heads, you know. Katonk, katonk, katonk.
Look where you're going, will you?
90 Day Wonder. Still got the original shine on those bars.
Lieutenant Grayson to see the adjutant.
He's not in, sir. The colonel said he'd see himself.
Thank
you. You can go right in, sir.
Thank you. Lieutenant Grayson reports for duty, sir.
At ease, Lieutenant. Welcome to Camp Shelby.
Thank you, sir.
This your first assignment since receiving your commission?
Yes, sir.
Well, Lieutenant, it's a rough one. The platoon you're taking over is just ready to start training, and as you may have noticed, our facilities are not all that they might be. We're short of officers, short of equipment, short of everything except trainees, and they're coming in by the carload. This is a brand new outfit, a new kind of outfit. No precedent for it except one battalion that was activated in Hawaii, and they haven't been tested yet. What do you think of the idea, Lieutenant?
Sir, I'd like to make a request.
What is it?
I'd like your permission, sir, to put in for a transfer to the 36th Division. You see, sir, I'm from Texas.
What has that got to do with it?
Nothing, sir, except that the 36th is an old Texas National Guard outfit, and I've been in it ever since I got in the Army. That is, until they sent me to OCS. I never would have gone if I thought... Sir, I just took it for granted that I'd go back to the 36th.
You're sure that's the only reason you have for wanting a transfer?
Yes, sir.
No objection to working with the kind of troops we have here.
Because they're Japs? Oh, no, sir. Nothing like that at all.
Now, let's get a couple of things straight, Lieutenant. First, there's not going to be any transfer. You're staying here. Have you got that?
Yes, sir.
Second, they're not Japs. They're Japanese Americans, Misei. Or as they call themselves, Buddha heads. All kinds of Buddha heads, Lieutenant. From Hawaii, Alaska, California, New York, Colorado, yes, and even some from Texas. They're all American citizens and they're all volunteers. Remember that. And another thing. We officers are referred to as howlies, not white men. Any questions?
No, sir.
Report to your company commander. Sergeant Major was sure it was orderly room. That'll be all, Lieutenant. Sorry to keep you waiting, Lieutenant.
Captain Solari.
That's right. That's our regimental slogan.
Go for broke.
It's pidgin English for shoot the works. Pull up a chair, Lieutenant.
Nice. I'll be with you in a minute. Tell me, sir, do you use live ammunition in the rifle range?
The Jap's a Jap, eh?
All I know is they were put under armed guard in relocation centers last year. Maybe the Army just had some surplus barbed wire they wanted to use up. Was that it?
The Army was facing an emergency at the start of the war, a possible invasion by Japanese troops. So all Japanese Americans were evacuated from the West Coast. There was no loyalty check, no screening, nothing. If there were any spies among them, I can assure you they're not in the 442. Every man in this outfit has been investigated, reinvestigated, and re-reinvestigated. Now, I suggest you start getting acquainted. Your platoon sergeant's over in the supply room, O'Hara.
O'Hara?
That's right, Takashi O'Hara.
Wait a minute.
Come back here. How long you been in the Army, soldier?
Let me see now. Maybe I've been inside 2-3 months. How long you been inside, Lieutenant?
Don't you know you're supposed to hold your salute till an officer returns it?
Oh, sure. Sometimes forget.
Sometimes forget to say sir, too, don't you?
Sometimes.
Well, don't forget it anymore.
No, sir.
That's your own uniform?
Sir, that's the smallest size he got for supply, Sergeant. Sir?
Well, roll those sleeves down.
I hold salute, sir.
Why are you wearing leggings with a Class A uniform?
To keep my pants up, sir. Long like that.
Well, get them cut down.
Oh, yes, sir. Payday, I'll go see the tailor, sir.
You better see somebody today before I see you again.
All right, man. All I want to see is backbones and elbows.
I'm going to jump ahead a bit to their basic training sequence.
Terry.
Terry. Nice name. Your wife?
Not yet.
What are you with?
I'm going to go a little bit further.
I want that man's name, Sergeant. There's no talking after the command at ease.
Yes, sir.
This man, no dog tags, needs haircut, window unwashed, uniforms hanging wrong way, haircut, shave, bunk out of line, dog tags, window, beer can on shelf, dirty floor, dirty boots, haircut, window, bowl of milk on floor, bowl stolen from mess hall, brought cat into barracks, floor, boots, dog tag, haircut, dust on rafters, window, haircut, dog tags, boots, bunk out of line, litter on floor, boots. Forget the book, Sergeant. They're all on the list. You men will fall out for a speed hike at 8 o'clock tonight. Before that, I want this Hutman GI'd. Get them started on it right away, Sergeant. Floor scrubbed, rafters dusted, windows washed, boots shined, bunks made. I want those blankets stretched so tight that when you drop a quarter on them, it'll bounce. I'll be back twice a day from now on with a pair of white gloves and a quarter.
You're a chicken expert. What do you make of him?
I want to go back to my little grass shack, back in Kalkiku, Hawaii. I want to be with all the Kanes and Wahines that I knew long ago. I can hear the old guitars playing.
Back, Katari!
What did he say?
I didn't hear anything, sir.
Bakatari, what does that mean?
Sorry, sir. I don't speak Japanese.
Boots, dog tag, window, dust on rafters, floor, boots. Boots. Blanket's not tight enough. Shirt unbuttoned, boots, window, floor.
All right, up and over. Go back and try it again. I'm gonna wait right here till everybody makes it.
Anything goes.
That's why we teach you dirty tactics. I will now demonstrate a grip against which there is absolutely no defense. The sergeant will now try to get free. Well, sergeant?
You want me to try, sir?
Of course I want you to try.
Very well, sir.
Stop there and talk about this a little bit. I had to show you that scene of training because I saw this film first when I was about maybe 9 years old. And in Monterey, where I grew up, the JACL would have these potlucks, community potlucks, and they showed this film after dinner one night. It was like 16 millimeter projection in an old social hall. And that scene where they're bouncing the quarter off the bed, that has stayed with me ever since. Whenever I make a bed, I remember, and I my wife is laughing because sometimes I'll joke around and take a quarter and try to bounce it on the bed. It's very hard to do, by the way. But I mention that because, I mean, these images that we see in film, these experiences really stick in your mind, especially an impressionable child's mind. I think there's a lot of things that, you know, you're not even conscious of that really hit home when you're watching films like this. So I think even at my early age watching this film, a lot of the things in the beginning, you know, I didn't realize were in the film till I saw it as an adult much later. Like, it was quite, they got a lot of information in those first introductory minutes of this film. You know, there's the whole explanation about the Katongs and the Hawaii theme is brought in, and the officers are explaining about, you know, explaining to the main Van Johnson character what happened, that this unit would be put together and so forth. So, very influential film. And to me, I still, when I watch it, it has a lot of impact for me even now. It seems so realistic. And, you know, maybe part of that is the actors are actually GIs from, or soldiers who fought in World War II with the 442. For instance, one of the guys listed in the credits is Lane Nakano, and he's one of the featured GIs. I think he fought in World War II, along with a bunch of other guys. The writer-director, Robert Perosh, he was a veteran also in Europe. And so 1951 is very soon after World War II. And, you know, when I was showing this film the other day to some staff at the museum, they were saying, wow, that's pretty amazing that, you know, despite all the prejudice against Japanese in the post-war era, that they would make a film that was this understanding and sympathetic to Japanese Americans was pretty amazing. Let's see. Do you have any comments seeing it? I need you to repeat the question for the tape.
How was this movie received by the general public in 1951?
I think it was pretty popular. I think it was pretty popular, and I know all the Niseis went to see it.
Yes, it was extremely popular amongst Japanese Americans, I think, as... yeah, I remember as a kid being so impressed with the heroics of these guys. And they really come across as sympathetic characters. And kind of the mean guy is Van Johnson, you know, who in the beginning is so skeptical that Japanese Americans could be a decent fighting force. And throughout the film, he gradually gains more respect for them. So in the end, it's really a great testimony to the fighting units in the 442-100.
I think one of the other important things is the casting of Van Johnson at that time, because Van Johnson was, you know, pretty close to being at the top of sort of, I think, his notoriety. So and I think it naturally, you know, evoked, I think, a more, at least a populist people wanting to come at least see the movie. So they did a good job, I think, in that regard. And then you're right, I think in the first 3 minutes, there's an amazing amount of information packed in there that, you know, if people had open ears, they could really, I think, develop an initial sense of sensitivity for this subject matter. That part was well done, I thought.
Yes, back there, I got to have you talk into the microphone.
Do you have any idea whose idea it was to create this movie? Was JACL one of the promoters of the idea, or did you know how it all got started?
You know, well, in the credits, you notice that Mike Masaoka was one of the technical consultants on the film. I'm not that familiar with the origin of it. I do know that the producer, Dori Sherry, I think was a person of liberal beliefs, and it may have been his inspiration to put the project together. And, you know, the writer-director was a veteran who was probably familiar with the story. And, I mean, it is a great story. So other than that, I'm not that familiar with the roots of the project. I wanted to show you one other sequence from the battle scene later in the film after they're in combat, because I think it gives, or at least it gave me a real feel for what combat was like for the gopher broke soldiers. So we'll take a look at a few minutes of that.
Gopher broke!
Thank you. that ought to work.
I wish we could look at more of this, but we have to move on to the next film. But if you want to rent it, I think it's out on DVD. And it's, you know, there's so much more. I just showed you the briefest clips of their training. But there's all in between those two scenes that I showed you, there's wonderful character development. The soldier with the uniform that's too long, you know, he has this pig that he carries with him through all the battles in Europe, and that's a running gag with a pig. And, you know, there's scenes of guys writing letters home and getting letters. It's really a great film, very influential in my understanding of the Japanese-American veteran experience. And, you know, I think it's a good way if you to introduce your own family, perhaps, to the story of the Gopher Broke experience. So moving on, that was 1951, right? And so the next clip I wanted to show you is from 1976. And the film is Farewell to Manzanar. And there's actually a screening this evening of Farewell to Manzanar. Are all of you going to that? Because I thought I would only show the briefest clip since that's being covered tonight. And the author of the book and the screenplay, Jeannie Wakatsuki Houston, is here at the conference, and she'll be talking about the film. But I found this another film that was very influential on me and my understanding of the Japanese-American experience, particularly the camps and the evacuation before being shipped off to camp. So I wanted to show you a brief scene of this family, the Wakatsuki family, that has been ordered to evacuate, and they have to sell all their belongings before they leave for camp. So it'll take me a minute to cue this up. So,
but those are... from a Bulgaria, 12 o'clock Thursday. Limited to that which can be carried by individual.
Excuse me, I see that you're moving. I was wondering if you had something you might want to sell. I could give you $15.
But those are 12 complete settings. It is worth $300.
I could only give you 15. Well, I could maybe 17.50, but that'd be the absolute tops. Those are valuable.
The day we left was so confusing. I remember we all had to wear tags, just like our suitcases. And we got box lunches from some Quakers. Besides them, Tony and his wife were the only people who came to say goodbye.
Do you know yet where they're taking you?
It's about one day ride on the bus. A place called Manzana. It's some kind of a camp. Do you know?
North or someplace, I don't know. Mama? There it was. Remember, Lisa, if you need anything, write us. Let us know how you are and where you are. Please. Tell that old fisherman that we're all thinking of him. And that I'll do what I can about his boat.
Hey, what's that?
My lunch.
You're supposed to take a box lunch like everybody else.
I'm on a special diet.
Let's see it. Okay, go on, get on.
So that's a little clip from Farewell to Manzanar. That scene of the mother smashing the plates on the porch, that to me is another scene like from Gopher Broke that just kind of lived in my memory ever since that time. And, you know, when I first saw that, I didn't feel it was realistic at the time because I was making a judgment on my own mother's behavior. You know, my mother was such a quiet person. I just couldn't imagine her smashing plates at that time. But then, you know, later again, when you reflect on these things as an adult, I think you have a different, you start to understand these things a little differently. And, when I saw Jeannie Houston, in fact, yesterday when she checked in for the conference, I made a point of asking her, well, you know that scene of smashing the plates? Did that really happen with your mother? Because that was her autobiography. She said, oh, yeah, my mother was a very quiet but strong woman. She had 10 children, and she smashed those plates in quiet fury when that fire sale happened to go away to camp. So that is based on an actual incident in Jeannie's life. And, you know, I guess because my mother was Nisei, she was born in the U.S., and she had no Japanese accent or anything. She was very American, and, you know, both my parents were in camp. But I never really, although they would talk about camp, I never really understood it on a gut level, seeing pictures or watching the average documentary, or even talking to them personally. It's just hard to put yourself in that place back when it happened. So I find that these movies really bring me closer through the acting and through the music and the editing and the drama, that they really kind of get you to that emotional place where you can maybe understand it a little better. I don't know. Do you have any reactions watching this scene?
I could see her smashing out. The reason, you know, they're very valuable, and they're offering peanuts. My parents had a grocery store, and all their fixtures and appliances. My father was arrested, so my mother had to liquidate everything. $25 for meat case and all our store appliances. But they weren't valuable like those dishes. So...
Thank you for that comment. You know, the other reason I thought it's important to show you these films is that I've kind of lost my track of thought here. Is as a filmmaker, you know, at the museum, when I make new products about the camps, you know, how do you portray the experience so it really hits home to young people who have no idea of what the experience might have been? For instance, at our museum, we have a program where middle school and high school students come to the museum, and they're mostly non-Japanese kids, but they go through our Japanese-American exhibits, and they learn about early immigrant life and camp life and so forth. But, you know, and they even meet docents like Yae Aihara, who just spoke. She's one of our guides who takes kids through the exhibit. But I often wonder, you know, do they really understand what a young person of 16 or 20, what they were going through at that time of, you know, being taken away and taken to camp and so forth. And, you know, myself not having experienced the camps, it's almost like the only reference I have is sometimes these films. So I'm continually questioning myself, am I making these pieces influenced by previous films, and how much were those films reflecting reality, right? So, yeah, you had a comment?
My name is Lucy Sato, and I just recently went to the Minidoka pilgrimage, and I took five of my children and five grandchildren. And, you know, we went through the barracks, and they were really surprised that seven of us had to sleep in one room. And I think this pilgrimage, they all said it was worth going, that they learned a lot about camp life, because we saw the mess hall, we saw the barbed wire, we saw the fire station guard, the entry. And so it was a good educational experience for them. So I think the pilgrimages are great.
Thank you. That's a good comment. I don't know how many of you have been to a confinement site, actually visited one. How many? Can I just see? It's like the Manzanar pilgrimage or the Minidoka pilgrimage, or I know there's several camp groups that sponsor these, Tule Lake. So I would urge you to go visit these places, and then it gives you further reference to understand that experience. So the next clip I have is in 1976, when Farewell to Manzanar was made, I was a middle school teacher, and that was very helpful that that program was broadcast on national television. It was really the first national mainstream TV coverage of, say, the Japanese-American experience in a dramatic way that, you know, people could identify with. And I was a teacher in Carmel, California, and it was amazing how distorted my students' view of Asians was, or of Japanese people. You know, they were mostly Caucasian students in the, and they had, you know, images of, they used to come up and say, "Hey, Mr. Asaki, you know, can you show us some karate moves?" Or, you know, "Do you know, like kung fu?" And all this related to very stereotypical imagery. So that was part of the reason I left teaching and went to Los Angeles to go to film school, because I thought, well, you know, maybe there's a way of getting involved in the process of making productions that might present better imagery to our students and children. So this next clip is one of the films that I worked on in 1981. It was called Hito Hata, Raise the Banner. And it was produced and directed by my film professor at UCLA. His name was Robert Nakamura. And I thought I'd show you a short clip that it's very similar to the Farewell to Manzanar clip we saw, but it gives you an idea of a different filmmaker's take on that evacuation scene.
Other Japanese Americans were put behind barbed wire. Citizen, alien, it made no difference as long as you had the face of the enemy.
Attention. Your attention, family. Will report.
It's better to speak in English, doesn't it?
This place, Manzana. What's it like?
Hamasaki says it's in the desert. That's all I know. Can you believe this?
Dad, Yamamoto's wife just stopped talking. She's in shock or something. Lead her around.
Hamasaki got close to nothing for the farm. He's a citizen.
Hito-san, この荷物はどこへ置きますか？あんたわからないんですよ、こんなに言っても。
Mr. George Tanaka. George Tanaka. Report registration.
Oh, I'm very sorry.
That's okay. It's been a confusing day for him. He's a little tired.
I got new boots, too. See? Look. You need good boots. They say the winter is very cold. Hey, what is your name?
Mine is Oda.
Michael, I guess I'm talking to you.
Ah, Michael. Oi, Michael.
Maybe we'll find wild horse out there. Camel, maybe?
Attention. Attention. Families or individuals.
Michael's usually a little more talkative. They took his father away.
Number 12.
They asked for Pearl Harbor. Still don't know where he is.
6 months already.
He thinks they're going to take me away, too.
Hey, cowboy, don't worry. We won't let anything happen to your mama. Right, Oda?
Okay, everyone on the bus. Come on, everyone on the bus. All baggage other than small hand baggage must be taken to the truck located at station number 6. 2, 3, 3.
You there? Stop right there. Turn around slowly. 6, 4, 9. What's that hung on your shoulder? Hand it over slowly.
7, 3, 3, 1, 1, 2. It's only shakuhachi. My fruit.
Hand it over, I said.
It's my shakuhachi. It goes with me.
Yes, sir.
Goddamn crazy Japs.
This was Hitohata, 1981. It was a very low-budget, independent film. It was put together, I think it was the first feature film directed, written, produced, featuring an entire Asian-American cast and crew. So it did have its ups and downs. If you watch it, I find it sometimes a little hard to watch because it's at times, you know, the quality suffers in comparison to other more high-budget feature films. But I think that in the spirit of this project was filmmakers trying to make a heroic portrait of Japanese Americans. And, you know, I think that incident there is a fictionalized creation to... it's not based on an actual incident of a shakuhachi being pulled back, but it was created as a dramatic portrait to inspire people that, you know, not everyone was a victim. It was kind of a symbolic approach to portraying the camp experience. So it was... again, a different filmmaker's take on the same material that you saw in the clip before. So, any comments on that clip? I like to show that clip because the woman boarding the bus with the baby is Nancy Araki, who is the longest-standing staff member of the Japanese American National Museum. And she's also the organizer of this conference. But back in 81, she had just come to L.A. She was working on the production, and she was used as a cast member. And some of you may recognize Hiroshi Kashiwagi, the writer from San Francisco. He plays Tatsumi, the character who's with Mako. Mako is another well-known Asian-American actor, the founder of East-West Players in L.A. And your grandson? Oh, yeah. there's another connection. So there's all these kind of insider information about this film, because it was very much a community project. You know, try to involve actors and community people as extras. And in fact, on that film, I met my wife, who was a casting director, Amy Kato. So I have a lot of fond memories of that project, so I had to show you that one. Okay, what's next on our agenda? Oh, does anyone have any comments on this one? Back here. Hitohata. It's distributed by a group called Visual Communications in Los Angeles, and I'm not sure if it's available on DVD, but... Okay. We're going to move to the next film, as I'm running out of time. Come See the Paradise. Has anyone seen this film before? It was kind of controversial at the time. It was made by the pretty well-known director, Alan Parker, who did Mississippi Burning and some other well-known Hollywood films. I think he's an Irishman or from Great Britain. I remember him coming to... visit community organizations in Little Tokyo when he was making this film to try to solicit input for the making of Come See the Paradise. But he was also very adamant that artists have the right to interpret material creatively however they want, despite what community people might feel about the way they're being portrayed. I think so. Those were interesting meetings with Alan Parker, but I thought I'd show you a clip from his film, Come See the Paradise. It's a love story. Dennis Quaid is a union organizer for the Projectionist Union. He's a kind of a firebrand, and he gets kicked out of New York for, various union activities. He comes to L.A., he works in the Japanese theater in Little Tokyo, where he meets Tamlin Tomita. And they get together, and, there was some objection to the community about the way the story was portrayed and how the story really kind of trivialized maybe the camps in favor of the love story between the white guy and the Asian woman and so forth. But it has some great scenes of recreation of Little Tokyo and the camp. So I'm going to show you a little bit of that. Thank you.
you get back from Seattle?
Just a couple of days, a week at the most. I'm just going to check in for my parole that I'm coming.
If only we knew where we're going.
I'll find you. Goodbye, Mama. Don't worry, this won't be for long, I'm sure.
Bring my camera?
Sorry, it's on a list.
Thanks for coming with me, Lily.
It's okay. I'm scared to come on my own as well.
Do you think they'll shoot us?
No, of course not.
I'm going to stop there. Another film is interesting to see because I'm leaving out a whole lot from this clip that I'm showing you, but I got to admit that Alan Parker did do a lot of research into the story, and there's a lot of different aspects of the Japanese-American historical experience that is included. One of the brothers becomes a no-no boy, and there's the father is shipped off to taken by the FBI, and there's a lot of aspects of the story that are very interesting historically. So warning, there's some steamy scenes with Dennis Quaid and Tamlin Tomita. So if you're going to show it to your young kids, you know, be aware that there are these scenes of that are more what, R-rated? I don't know, but very interesting because it's obviously a high-budget Hollywood production. It looks like they spared no expense in creating the camp scenes, and they had extras and thousands of costume extras and so forth. I'm kind of running short on time, but any comments on Come See the Paradise? This is available for rental in your video stores. No comments? Okay, I want to show you the next piece. Hold on one second. Did I have everything I wanted to say? Come See the Paradise was produced for $15 million. That was the budget. And its box office was $947,000. So it didn't make very much money at the box office. So, I mean, that's part of the reason Hollywood doesn't really want to take on stories of this nature, is that this one in particular didn't really do well. Although, in watching it again, when it first came out, I didn't like it very much. But, recently at the museum, we've had more like currently we have an exhibition on the Hapa experience, and we've talked a lot more about intermarriage between Japanese and non-Japanese, and I kind of have more of a broader perspective now, maybe, and I look back on it, and, you know, the things that bothered me about the film originally maybe are not so irritating anymore. Anyway, I wanted to show you a brief clip from Days of Waiting. Okay, so Come See the Paradise was 1990, and this film, Days of Waiting, was 1991.
Dear Kara, it was so good hearing from you after all these years. I, too, have thought many times about our days in camp and the friends we had back then. Yes, I have considered writing about my experiences, my childhood, why I went to camp with Arthur, and what it was like during and after the war. So, for the record, this is my story.
Okay, I just wanted to show you that brief clip because I'm running out of time. This won the Academy Award for the best documentary short of 1991. And so it really was a documentary, although it had a lot of elements of a dramatic film in it, which is why I include it as... I was able to work on this film as a sound recordist, and my job was to go along with a crew to interview Estelle Ishigo, who was a Caucasian woman artist who was married to a Japanese person and went to camp with him and did art in camp. But by the time we went to interview her, she was her health was in such decline, she was not even able to speak to the camera crew. So all the voice in this film is done by a professional actor who is portraying Estelle Ishigo's voice. And obviously it was very effective because it won the Academy Award that year. But anyway, I just threw that in as an example of something with dramatic elements in a documentary that really helps get over the message of the piece. And my last piece, I only have 1 minute. Can I? Are you still with me? I have one more clip. It's a film called Picture Bride. It's a great film about the first Issei coming to Hawaii from Japan. It was made by the late Kayo Hata, who was a woman filmmaker, and I think she very sensitively portrayed the experience of Issei women, and I wanted to show you a bit of that film. So here we go.
Thank you. 中村亮。ここにいるのがあなたの夫、木村松二です。相手の写真を出して確認してください。
年がちょっと何かの間違いだと思うんですけど。
これは友達の写真を使ったんでしょう。
友達なんですか？
いえ、私が木村松二です。最近の写真がなかったもんで、どうもすみません。
And shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall become one flesh. What God has joined together, let no man put asunder. Now please take your bride's hand by the power vested in me by the territory of Hawaii.And the Church of Jesus Christ, I now pronounce you man and wife.
A brief taste of Hawaii in Picture Bride. Again, I don't do justice to the whole film with just one little clip, but it's, again, there's a lot of research went into this film about the experiences of Issei women and the clothing, the costuming is authentic. The filmmaker borrowed a lot of authentic Issei clothing that was brought from Japan and used in the plantation. So to me, it gave a really, it opened up my understanding of what the Issei women went through and, you know, how their marriages were not all a bed of roses. You know, there were a lot of conflicts. And, you know, in this scene, she obviously, the picture that she had of her husband-to-be was not what she thought she was getting, which happened all the time, apparently. And there were a lot of broken marriages amongst, runaway brides and runaway husbands. So, again, this is an interesting film, but it does have some racy scenes of Tamlin Tomita again, who and Yuki Kudo, who's a Japanese actress. But anyway, my time has come. Okay, well, you know, you're free to leave if you would like to, because our time is supposed to end at 4:30. but I had another film after Picture Bride. It was any questions on Picture Bride?
Not necessarily regarding Picture Bride, but how do you see the future of film, Japanese American? You know, in the community, what's going to be made? Where is it headed? Is it more mixed race? You know, like combining Japanese, Chinese, Filipino, because that's what's happening with the Asian population here? Or are we going to go back and look for more stories about the Nisei and Issei? And do you see a lot of, documentary approach in new ways to the historical subject.
I think you've kind of touched on all the possibilities, you know. It really depends on the people going to film school now, the people who are studying and developing their skills. What stories do they want to focus on? And, you know, I think it is somewhat easier nowadays to make a film project because the equipment is much more accessible. And you can shoot and edit your film and make it look terrific now, much easier than in the days when people were shooting film that you had to develop at the lab and then edit on these amazingly complicated machines. So I think there's a bright future for filmmakers coming up to tackle all different kinds of subjects. And even if you don't get distributed by a big company like Universal or Warner Brothers or MGM, you can put it on YouTube, and if it gets an audience, you know, I see videos on YouTube that have like 100,000, 100 million hits. You know, if something resonates with an audience that has a story or a clever approach, it's going to resonate with people. So I feel like the younger generation of filmmakers...
The guy that made Sugar Man, he just got a dramatic film, I mean a documentary. He just got an Academy Award. He shot all that on an iPhone and edited it. But it took him 4 or 5 years because he didn't have the money to do it. And I think in terms of when you say whether or not we could produce more films, the last 10 years some of the films that John and other Asian Americans had made, Japanese Americans, about the camp experience, we were funded by CLEF, the California Civil Liberties Fund, which made it possible for us to make projects about these films. And, you know, John also wrote and directed a short drama called Stand Up for Justice about Ralph Lazo. But that was funded by CLEF, and that's part of the problem with independent filmmakers is getting the funding and to be able to recreate films with so little money. So that's part of it. Yes?
Beth Tatakawa, the director of the Wing Luke Asian Museum, was just talking to my husband on the phone the other day about Jamie Ford, the author of Hotel on the Corner of Bitter and Sweet, being offered to make a movie out of his book. But...
Oh, but they had a problem with an Asian male lead, so they wanted him to rewrite the story with a Caucasian actor. So they still haven't crossed that barrier, in a sense, you know... Just the male-female thing. Maybe they're okay with a female lead now, you know, but it's still there's a hang-up there. So he walked away, apparently, because, you know, it would have taken the whole context out of his story, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's going back to Farewell to Manzanar. You know, Farewell to Manzanar, the studio executives at Universal wanted much more more white characters because they felt if it's going to be on mainstream television, you have to have characters that the audience, the mainstream audience, can relate to. And thankfully, the director, John Cordy, stood firm with Jeannie Wakatsuki Houston, and they, as he puts it, in an interview he did, the Universal assigned an African-American executive to come to the meeting to tell him that he needed more white characters in the film, which was, you know, so they held firm, and they didn't buckle. There is still a white nurse character in the film that's, you know, somewhat prominent, but it is mainly a Japanese American family story. Oh, yeah. And, you know, in Farewell to Manzanar, there's a music, famous music teacher, Frizzell, Lou Frizzell, famous at Manzanar. And they wanted the story to be about Lou Frizzell because they felt that the audience would be more involved with it. But, you know, if you watch the film, I challenge you to see that you're not involved because this family's Japanese-American, you know? You really feel for the family because the actors do a superb job of portraying human experience. And, Dennis Quaid could bring in the white people as well. Yes. Right. I mean, Dennis Quaid, he... Okay, the last clip is from a film called Snow Falling on Cedars. And as, again, Ethan Hawke is the white star, and Yuki Kudo, who is in Picture Bride. And I thought it was good to show because it happens in the Pacific Northwest, where we are today. And so let's take a look at how they treated the camp experience in Snow Falling on Cedars. This is the detained Issei men. Thank you. This film, I was watching it the other day. It is beautifully shot. Every shot is like a work of art. And its budget was $35 million. It was a big $35 million was the budget. It was twice, more than twice what Come See the Paradise was. And it has some great performances by Sam Shepard, I think, is the newspaper reporter, the older newspaper reporter, and Ethan Hawke is his son. And, you know, Ethan Hawke has a relationship with Yuki Kudo. And, again, there's racy scenes in this. So, you know, there's warnings if you're going to show it to children. But some amazing shots of the Japanese-American experience in the Northwest. So,
This is just a comment about how I saw film, and it has nothing to do with the Japanese-American theme. But it was the first film I remembered seeing where a Japanese guy got the white girl, even though there was another white guy who was interested in her, and she was interested in him. And if you ever see it on TV, it's called The Crimson Kimono, and James Shigeta is the Japanese-American guy, and it has nothing to do about Japanese-Americans. It's just a detective movie, and it just so happens in that movie that, again, the Japanese guy gets the white girl, and I thought, wow, that's... What's that? Yeah, he said it was a breakthrough. At the time I got my copy, there was no commercial version available. I got it from somebody who had taped it off TV. I believe, was it Sam Fuller that did that movie? And he, I believe, has a DVD collection of movies that one movie is embedded into. So just a thought for anybody who wants to see something. It's black and white. I'm guessing it's from the 50s. And it has great scenes of Little Tokyo. That's true, in the old days. So just a thought.
Yep. Oh, the date? The gate? Revenue was $23 million. Didn't quite make a profit.
I just want to add a commercial. A couple of the films are available at the museum store booth. And some of the films are available at the Museum Star online.
Thank you. And I...
I'll feed you your closing question. If you had the resources, what movie would you make? Whether a feature film, documentary, or whatever, is there a book or a person that you would love to get on film?
You know what would be fun is my growing up years in a little town on the Central Coast, you know, going to YBA dances and that kind of thing. And I don't know. But, you know, it's the difficulty is whenever you recreate an era, it's difficult from a research standpoint and costuming and, you know, getting the mannerisms correct. And then, you know, it all costs money to do all that recreation. So I want to thank you for staying late at this session. And, hopefully we could have some kind of film festival in the future. We see all these films in their entirety week after week so we can talk about them. Thank you.